Funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies.
How have female superheroes shaped American girls' sense of themselves and their dreams for the future? And why has there been such a battle to control how those characters are portrayed? Wonder Woman made her comic book debut in 1941, just as American women were preparing to occupy unprecedented roles in the workforce. The character came to be portrayed in contradictory ways over the years by those who wished to use her as an example of female virtue, at one point setting aside crime fighting to focus on running a clothing boutique. But as my guest today will tell us, Wonder Woman's fans have always been most devoted to the version of the character who is strong enough to stand up to powerful and sometimes dangerous men without having to act exactly like them. Erin Prather Stafford is executive producer of Wonder Women, the untold story of American superheroines. We've invited her today as part of KERA's Women and Girls Lead Initiative, and you can watch the documentary tonight at 10 o'clock on KERA Channel 13. Erin, welcome to Think.
Thank you for having me.
So how did the idea for this film come about?
So our director, Christy Guevara Flanagan, was reading an article in the New York Times several years ago. It was about Gail Simone. She is actually the first woman writer of Wonder Woman, the comic. But that was like, 2000, I think it was 2008. And she was so enthralled with that idea of how could one of the most iconic fictional characters and, an icon. And she grew up with the 70s show, so she was very attached to the character. Why did it take so long to have a woman writer? So that kind of started the research into the whole character and the interviews, and then the film just kind of built from that.
Yeah, I was very surprised to learn that the character was invented by a man, but he was a man who was very much ahead of his time in the way he thought. Can you talk about William Moulton Marston?
He was very ahead of his time in many ways, actually. He is had a very colorful life. I would recommend anyone just to research him further. He believed that there should be a strong comic book character. There really wasn't anything like her when he came around. And kind of interesting is that he actually had a wife, and he also had not enough so like a mistress, but a partner, and they all actually lived together. And I know that there's one of the things that came from his partner is that she actually wore bracelets. So that was one of the little tidbits he kind of incorporated into the character. So he's a very, very interesting guy. Very untraditional thinking. But in that way, it kind of played into this comic book character at the time, which was very untraditional and kind of broke boundaries.
And he had an academic background in law and also in psychology. And he became convinced that the only way we would have global peace is if we let women run the world.
Yes. In the movie, I think we mentioned he had predicted that we'd be in a matriarchy within 100 years. So he dreamed very big.
So how was he in 1941 in a position to suggest a comic book heroine?
It's interesting. He just took the idea, and whatever reason, you could say the stars aligned that they just ran with it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that kind of stuff does happen. And he was fortunate to be the right place, right time, and the right concept was accepted. And and it was the wartime as well. And when she was created, she became kind of that figure for women to become involved with, being strong and, winning with the war effort. I mean, her outfit, obviously, red, white, and blue.
Yeah. And of course, in the early part of the war, women were suddenly recognizing that they would have to take on very different roles than they had traditionally as an entire generation of men went away to fight the war.
Yeah, there's no choices. I mean, women had to go in and start building planes and building artillery and building, and sending all that off to the war, to help with the war effort. They're just simply, that's just the only way we're going to win. What's interesting, of course, is, and there's been lots of studies about this, is how that changed women, like how they saw themselves. And it didn't seem, while some did go back to just the traditional homemaker role, which was fine, there's some, I think, that were kind of got a taste of what it would be like to be, quote, a working woman.
Yeah, I think there's a line in the film that says, I forget who was quoted, but basically they learned that nothing that their husbands and sons and fathers were off doing was too hard for them to do. They just needed training.
Yes, I think it's along the lines of, factory work is no more difficult than housework.
Right. Which, you can a comment like that can be taken a lot of different ways, but essentially it was opening people up to this idea. The the character of like Wonder Woman's backstory is really interesting because she comes from the kind of place that Marston imagined the world might someday be.
Yes, I mean, you know, Paradise Island, you know, a lot of folks, I think, are kind of familiar with the traditional Wonder Woman origin story. And Paradise Island, the Amazon, you know, Amazons live there. They worship Aphrodite, which is the goddess of love and peace. And so they're very, traditionally, are very in tune with those values. And she, you know, Princess Diana was, her mother wanted a daughter and, you know, molded her from clay and breathed life into her. And she was raised by, you know, women. And then the idea is Steve Trevor crashes on the island and then she, you know, rescues him and then is introduced to the plights of man's world, which is the war. So then she goes back, she goes off to, you know, help out the allies.
It is, again, that sort of classic hero narrative that we discussed on this show last week, where the hero initially is sort of reluctant to leave this place where they fit in and everything's great, but then they feel like there's no choice, that they're the only one to take on this task.
Yeah, and the story, you know, it's she actually disguises herself to win. There's a series of tasks or tests to see who's going to be the woman to go into back to man's world and escort Steve Trevor back. And she disguises herself from her mother to win that and then reveals herself. And then her mother keeps the promise that whoever won would be the one who got sent back or who gets sent.
So early on, Wonder Woman was not saved by Steve Trevor, this pilot who crashes on this island of paradise, right? Essentially, she kind of saves him.
Steve Trevor really doesn't save her a whole lot, actually, throughout the
Yeah. So
but she always saves him a
lot. Over time, people wanted to sort of interpret that relationship in different ways.
Yeah, I think, and in the film we kind of talk about it, you know, the 40s was kind of about the war effort, but when the war was over and all the men started coming back, and I think there was a desire to return to a more traditional roles that had existed before the war, a comforting maybe, and one of the things for Wonder Woman was that she kind of changed from saving Steve Trevor and saving people to being Steve Trevor's romantic interest, and we have a shot of her being holding a letter that Steve Trevor says, you know, Wonder Woman, will you marry me? So it's just kind of interesting. It's a very much of a change in her character just within a decade.
And what I always liked about Wonder Woman is that she's not so much superhuman, right? She doesn't have extraordinary physical strength. She's got cool technology.
She does have cool. Actually, she's extremely strong. Mm-hmm. She's a god.
But I guess she's not immortal, right?
Actually, yeah.
She's immortal too? All right.
Actually, the joke is a lot of times that she is a lot of ways Superman's equal. the joke of maybe one of the few that could be. And a lot of the, I think, arguments with the characters, sometimes she's not allowed to be that strength, that strong of a character. But she does have the wonderful weapons, and her traditional ones, of course, are the bracelets, which everyone's a lot familiar with, and her crown that she can take off and throw kind of as a boomerang, and then, of course, the golden lasso, which makes everyone that's binded by it tell the truth. And there's a joke that, you know, it's probably the scariest weapon known to men, probably women too, but yes, you have to tell the truth when bound by it.
So what was the backlash after the war? Was it essentially that I mean, I don't think people probably did this deliberately, but the sense was that women had gotten a little too big for their britches and needed to be reminded?
No, it wasn't. I mean, there was a little bit of that, I think, but I think that kind of crossed across all media. I think it was more of like wanting just to return to the more traditional roles. I think sometimes this is my personal thoughts, is maybe it's such an upheaval that war causes, you kind of have a desire to go back to when it was a more simple, understood time, and maybe that was the desire, and maybe that, you know, and also it was just like, well, let's just, everyone's back, so let's just get back to how things were normally. But then also there was, in the 50s, there was a book that came out that basically criticized comics for being too horror or too violent, and was basically causing juvenile delinquency and corrupting. And one of the criticisms of Wonder Woman was the all-female cast, because at that time she actually had a large female cast, which is actually even to this day unique. And there was, they thought maybe she was like promoting lesbianism, that she was promoting, you know, they did
so,
that.
So like little girls are going to read a Wonder Woman comic book and that is going to make them lesbians.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, it was kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. And it's at that time, but it wasn't just Wonder Woman. I mean, it vanillaed, as we say in the film, a lot of comic books, you know, Catwoman, who is Batman's nemesis in the 40s, you know, she gets amnesia, can't remember who she is, and kind of gets sent off to the madhouse. I mean, you know, Lois Lane was very much focused on wanting to be the ace reporter, and all of a sudden she's more concerned about being Mrs. Superman. So it wasn't just Wonder Woman. Actually, it was across the whole field of comic book characters.
It's so interesting, Erin, because given what we know about who was writing these things, all of that says a lot more about the mental state of men at that time than of women.
Yeah, I mean, because that was who predominantly wrote the comics at the time. So, and the industry itself was taking its cues. And, again, I think it's, comics have always been credited with being a really interesting reflection of what's going on in society. It's kind of one reason we wanted to make this film as well, because, it's kind of been shown over and over again. And even to this day, it continues to be a reflection of the issues we're dealing with as a society.
I was really touched in the film. One of the sort of real life characters that you interview is a little girl named Katie. And I guess she's in fourth grade and she gets picked on sometimes. But for her, even now that Wonder Woman is not sort of everywhere in the culture, for this little girl, Wonder Woman is like what gets her through the day.
Yeah. And Katie's wonderful. And she was actually discovered at New York Comic Con. And when you see the film, you'll understand why we immediately had to go interview her. She's dynamic. And of course, her joke now is she's like, I will forever be in fourth grade, thanks to y'all, because she's now a few years older. But she really does capture what having a heroine in your life or growing up with someone that you just have that character to look up to and to kind of embody and dress up as and play imagination as, what it can be a benefit for. And for her, reading about superheroines, I mean, it helps her deal with getting a little bit picked on and bullying and all those things that we've all dealt with as kids. And now, I'm a parent, I want my daughter to be able to kind of picture being kind of a superheroine and standing up for what's right.
And the interesting thing, too, about Wonder Woman is that she wasn't just she wasn't Superman in a woman's body. She did. There's that sense of justice and compassion. And Wonder Woman tried to solve things peacefully whenever possible.
Yeah, that goes back actually to Marston's original view of her, and that's how she was written. And he is, and definitely should be credited with that, because that makes her, for many years, it made her very unique in that sense. Now, in recent years, she's actually gotten a little more violent. There was one incident, I think the first time she killed someone, and I may be mistaken, but was that Superman was going to destroy the world and there was a guy controlling his mind and she had to break the guy's neck. Mm-hmm. But it was a very big turning point in comics for her character, because some people were just aghast at the fact that she had been, that they decided to go in that direction. Others were like, well, it's a character growth. So, I mean, that's up to anyone's interpretation. But for most part of her, legacy, she's definitely been a piece, resolving through peace. And you saw that in the television show with Linda Carter.
Yeah. But of course, we've also entered an era where we're more comfortable with the idea of women in combat.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of, it's not so unusual to see, to envision that nowadays. And you see that too, especially in other media. The Hunger Games would be a good, where you have a strong female character who's very active and, she's forced to be violent against other, her other folks that she's competing with in the games.
And she definitely saves the guy in that movie multiple times. My guest is Erin Prather Stafford. She's executive producer of Wonder Women, the untold story of American superheroines. It airs tonight on KERA Channel 13 at 10 o'clock as part of the Independent Lens series. We'll come back to the conversation in a couple of minutes. If you've got a Wonder Woman memory from your childhood, perhaps from your early adulthood, we'd love to hear about her impressions on you. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, where you can design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in human rights, global studies, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
That, of course, is the theme from the television series Wonder Woman in the mid-1970s, starring Linda Carter. My guest this hour is Erin Prather Stafford. She's executive producer of the Independent Lens documentary Wonder Women, The Untold Story of American Superheroines. It airs tonight on PBS stations all over the country, including KERA Channel 13 at 10 o'clock tonight. If you'd like to join us with a Wonder Woman question or a story or an experience, give us a call at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So I thought it was great, Erin. In the film, you interview Linda Carter. You interview the the Bionic Woman, right?
Lindsay Wagner. Yes.
Lindsay Wagner. Both of whom say, you know, for young people today looking at those characters, maybe they don't seem so feminist and they don't seem so empowered. But for their day, they were pretty astonishing.
You know, it's been really what's meant a lot to me is when we've shown this film across the country at different film festivals is how many women, I mean, I'm in my 30s, mid-30s, and we all kind of bond over the fact that we would twirl to Wonder Woman watching her. I mean, and there's definitely a generation that just recalls doing that. And because we were like, we wanted to be Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. And the same with the Bionic Woman. You know, there's a huge still fan base for those shows and about the impact they had. It's such a strong impact on the people who watch it, but actually both men and women.
People might remember that the first regular issue of Ms. Magazine actually featured Wonder Woman, but I didn't know the whole backstory that Gloria Steinem really went out of her way to restore Wonder Woman to her, like, former power and glory.
Yeah, and you know, I didn't know this till we started, you know, doing this project. In the 60s, Wonder Woman took an interesting turn in her storyline. She actually was stripped of her powers and opened up a clothing boutique and was very, kind of went on these martial arts, tasks. And she had, like, samurai swords. And it's, you know, it kind of reflects what was the culture of that time and very fun, but not traditional Wonder Woman. And when Miss was looking for a cover, they had all grown up with her. Mm-hmm. So to them, that's what she kind of represented. And when they found out she had kind of gone on this new path, they basically, you know, the joke is she says requested, you know, that DC change back the more traditional storylines and give her back her superpowers and give her back her original background story.
And it's hard to say no to Gloria Steinem.
Exactly.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Julio in Dallas. Hi, Julio.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions, though, that I would love if I can get a beautiful answer. And that is, I've been collecting comic books for over 40 years now, and I've been collecting Wonder Woman since before I was born. I inherited my father's collection. But there was a time where most superheroes, in order for them to be accepted by us, they had to be flawed. And one of Wonder Woman's weaknesses was that she could not fight her own gender. And for some reason, they phased that out. Okay? And then the second question that I have is, there was a movie that was actually made back in the mid-70s called Wonder Woman, and it was played by, I think it was Kathy Crosby. They never bring that up either, and she was awesome.
Well, let's see if we can get some answers for you.
Well, thank you. I'm guessing you saw the film. You've already seen it. You know, we basically, to keep it within the time limit that we gave, we had a lot of things that we wanted to include. And that's you brought up a couple things that were considered. The Kathy Crosby one was one of them. You know, we just decided for, you know, many reasons, but we just decided not to include those. But it's been interesting. We have a very robust social media group on Facebook, and that's actually come up. So, you know, it's a lot of people didn't know about that. It's real interesting. And I love that your dad gave you your Wonder Woman comics. That's wonderful.
Yeah. And it's worth pointing out that, you know, just as young women need male and female role models, so do young men.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. We do have an email here. Actually, this came in on our website. Feminists have been pushing this, writer says, on worldwide culture to favor women. Unfortunately, this push has diminished and caused an adversary position to develop around being male here in the USA. Don't believe men are treasured as anything anymore. Additionally, many women now strive to be Wonder or Superwoman in order to break even in today's economically bound world. What do you think about that? Does Wonder Woman, is she a sort of an anti-male figure?
No, I don't think she is at all, actually. And even there's an interesting quote by Linda Carter in the film where she says in her portrayal of the character, she wanted to be before women, but not certainly not against men. And I think you kind of see that carried out with the show because of how many men also say they loved that show and they admired her. Not just, I mean, she's an extremely lovely looking woman. I mean, there was definitely the physical aspect of that. But I think they also gravitated to the character. You know, I think it's a difficult, we're in kind of difficult new territory because women are kind of trying to be, I guess, as you were saying, kind of superwoman. But I think there's also a realization that you need that strong support network, and that can be with your partner. I mean, men or, you know, male, female, family, whatever you may, you know, friends, however you find it. I personally don't believe in that feminism is against men. I'm sorry that there has been that portrayal over, you know, it's been a consistent criticism, and I'm sorry that that's been taken that way. But to me, it just means kind of an equal partnership between the sexes and how to make the world a better place is sing song and rainbows, as that sound. But, you know, I just to make the world better and to have that equality.
Yeah, I mean, I was a child during sort of second wave feminism in the 70s. And I have to say, I'm not an expert on that period in history. But it seems to me that since that time, I think a lot of people have come around to the notion that you don't have to be anti anybody to be pro woman.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my feel, too. It's because I think if you have strong women and women who believe that they can, you know, be in control of their own lives and be in control of their own destinies and, you know, have heroines and heroes to look up to, heroes as well, it's more just wanting 50-50 balance. And right now with the media, who's creating the media, there's still quite a lot, you know, extreme large percentage of men who do it and not as many women.
Yeah, and in terms of decision-making power, you're
yes,
saying.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, the film, it's 77% of media is controlled by men, 3% by women still.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to the phone now. This time we have Katie on the line in Dallas. Hey, Katie.
Hi. I just wanted to say that growing up in the 70s, that Wonder Woman was such a big part of Halloween costumes. I must have worn mine until, you know, the plastic suit until it was up to my elbows and the mask that's, you know, with the tiny slits that cut your face. But for me, the television show was so enthralling, but I couldn't wrap my head around the character of Wonder Woman and then that juxtaposition of Hollywood, because I always got so angry every time Wonder Woman was after somebody and she dove it off a pier to save somebody or to do something, and then Linda Carter was in a swimming pool. And it just drove me crazy that they couldn't portray her as a character correctly. And I know it was Hollywood, but that became kind of that deflating moment where Wonder Woman became, oh gosh, she really is a character. Oh no. it was so deflating for me.
Do you mean the idea for you as a kid that it was just, she was just an actress, or do you mean the way they used her sexuality to sort of sell
really
the show?
Just the fact that it was the actress, that it wasn't real. Why couldn't she be strong enough to jump off a pier and be in the water? And my mom couldn't explain it to me. Mm-hmm. Nobody could explain to me how come they couldn't figure out a way to show her to be as strong and as realistic as I wanted her to be. And it was a deflating moment for me.
Huh. Maybe in the CGI technology of the 21st century, a new Wonder Woman could be fully convincing.
Yeah, no, I think there's been a struggle with how to depict. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that first Superman movie with Christopher Reeve was so, I mean, people were so blown away by it because it was the first time they could actually do the flying, like the flying scene felt at that time very real.
Right. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have an email here from another Aaron that says, I was invincible in my Wonder Woman underoos. Yes, I remember these were like deeply desirable for a period of time in the mid-1970s, and women of a certain age will recall that. 1-800-933-5372, our number. Let's go to Greenville now. We have Jennifer on the line. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I'm so glad you were talking about this because it is a topic that my friends and I reminisce about. I always look forward to the show, but in my six-year-old eyes at the time, my mother looked just like Linda Carter. Hmm. And my mom laughs about that when I tell her that, you know, I thought my mother was the most beautiful, strong woman in the world, and somehow I was convinced that my mom was Wonder Woman.
Well, what a fantastic story.
Huh?
That's such a sweet story.
Yeah, it is. It was exactly at the same time my parents were going through a divorce, and mom became a single mother, single parent, and I had no doubt she could handle it because I was absolutely convinced that this mom who dropped us off, went to work, and then, you know, we were latchkey kids. So when she came home, I knew that she was really out there being Wonder Woman.
Jennifer, thank you so much for your call. You know, that's another great point about that period in history, Erin. There were a lot more single parent families in the culture.
Yeah, it's the time that was, you know, becoming more, is occurring more. And I think that, you know, we did see, I have a feeling there are a lot of little girls who looked up to their moms.
Mm-hmm.
As they had to kind of, well, and also women were starting to be both, you know, at home and at work. So they kind of had to take on a bit of that superwoman persona to juggle everything.
We have an email here from Russell who says, can you talk about how Wonder Woman's connection to Greek mythology and where writers went to find such a powerful female figure? I guess there had been... the first sort of female superheroines would have been from Greek mythology, right?
Yeah, it was based on the Amazons themselves. Mm-hmm. The Amazons were actually, you know, Greek mythology. And I cannot say I know for sure how he came up with the concept to bring that into her backstory. But, this, you know, the stories have been around forever. So who knows, maybe he read it as a child and that just stuck with him as something he ever wanted to incorporate. I don't know. Maybe someone out there does. But, you know, it's been interesting now is in her most recent comic incarnation, which has been actually gotten a lot of discussion because the writer has definitely brought in more of the Greek mythology back in. Now, some of the criticism of that has been that she has now become kind of not, it's not her comic book. She is one of many characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of one of the more consistent criticisms of that. But a lot of people do like it.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Kate in Denton. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Well, first I want to say, on the subject of Greek mythology, I don't know how you can bring up Wonder Woman without linking her back to Diana, the huntress, who was also a Greek myth. But my comment was, I'm actually a student underneath Sean Treat, who was on the show last week.
Mm-hmm.
We love to talk about comic books. And I'm in my early to mid-20s now, and my biggest memory of Wonder Woman was from the 1990s cartoon, The Justice League. And that was kind of a problematic representation for me. In fact, I remember not liking her because really Wonder Woman and all of the Amazons that were represented in that show were kind of man-hating. And it was, to me now, looking back, it was a tension between second and third feminism being represented there. It was kind of, I don't know, archaic. And in the 90s, it's a little bit late, I think, in terms of pop culture and how we're thinking to really be represented in that way. But that's what I took from it.
That's really interesting. Well, thanks for your call. I have to say that's after my time. I remember Super Friends, and I guess Wonder Woman was there. But are you familiar with the...
Yes, actually, my husband and I have watched that series as well. You know, she has been a very difficult character. I mean, the kind of one of the reasons people are like, why isn't there a Wonder Woman movie? One of the, you know, in discussions and hypotheses about that is because she is a difficult character of how do you bring the values and what was what was kind of referred to as archaic into the present. And there has been a lot of back and forth about that. And I think, you know, it's like, how do you keep the core of her without taking that away? It's a hard balance act. And I think a lot of writers have struggled with that. And especially there was a Wonder Woman television show they tried to launch a couple years back, and David E. Kelly did it. And he's admitted it, that they, in his own admission, an interview, that they just missed the boat. On it. It was a terrible pilot. It did not need to get picked up. It was, I mean, you can, if you can find it. But yeah, it's they just kind of missed the boat. He's like, we just didn't get how to write her.
Well, it's reasonable to argue that the way that popular culture has given us more Wonder Woman is by calling her Buffy the Vampire Slayer and calling her Thelma and Louise and calling her Lara Croft and you know, all of which may have flaws and strengths on their own. But maybe it's too much to expect one character to embody everything that is good about women.
Well, and that's kind of the discussion point on it is it is a huge undertaking. And as a fan of Wonder Woman, I think a lot of Wonder Woman fans feel this way, is that the greatest fear is that they'll finally do a movie and it will not be good. And it will just not be a good movie. And there's been, you know, complaints or the arguments have been like, well, you know, women, you know, in this kind of film, who carry the movie. We tried it twice with like Catwoman, and there was Elektra, and it's like, yes, but those weren't Catwoman with Halle Berry. It's like, yes, you tried it, but those weren't good movies. If it had a male character in the center, it wouldn't have been a good movie. Mm-hmm. That's not a fair assumption of it. So, you know, I think there's a little bit of fear on how to put it together for the movie. And then there's fear from the fans, because if they don't get it right and it bombs, it's going to be heartbreaking.
Yeah, and I would imagine each really devoted fan has his or her own idea of what the perfect Wonder Woman looks like, acts like, sounds like.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. One of the most very popular discussion is who should play her, and it changes, you know, I would say almost, you know, every couple of months the discussion comes up and people have suggestions and ideas and hopes and dreams. And also who should write it.
My guest is Erin Prather Stafford. She is executive producer of the independent lens documentary Wonder Women, The Untold Story of American Superheroines. It airs tonight on PBS stations all over the country, including KERA Channel 13 in North Texas at 10 o'clock. If you'd like to join the conversation, we've got a line open at 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, where you can design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in human rights, global studies, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with the executive producer of tonight's independent lens documentary on PBS stations around the country. It's called Wonder Women, The Untold Story of American Superheroines. The film by Erin Prather Stafford will debut at 10 o'clock on KERA Channel 13 in North Texas. If you want to join the conversation, call in to 1-800-933-5372. We have Kevin on the line in Dallas now. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I'm so happy you're doing this, because growing up, I was born in 1970, and growing up in the 70s as a gay black child, it was really, really tough in my neighborhood to, number one, be gay, but to love Wonder Woman, because she just empowered me and empowered gay people, period, over the years. I mean, she's a gay icon also. And that strength, I mean, I couldn't dare let my mother know I was watching on television, because she'd kill me, but I would sneak to watch it because it was so profound, you know, because being gay, I was in touch with my feminine side along with my masculine side.
Yeah.
And this woman did the same thing. She was very in touch with her feminine side, but also in touch with her masculine side. And it was very profound, and I'm so glad the special is coming on tonight, because I can't wait to watch it.
Well, I'm so glad you called in, Kevin. Thank you for that story. And in fact, Wonder Woman's role as a gay icon is an element of the film.
Yes, it is. We actually interviewed Andy Mangles. He lives in Portland, and he actually started an event called Wonder Woman Day. I think it's now Women of Wonder Day, but at the time it was Wonder Woman Day, and it's a fundraiser where artists can create their interpretations of Wonder Woman, and all the money proceeds go to domestic violence shelters. And he is an openly gay man. He exactly the same things as the caller said. He was drawn to the character because it embodied things that he just connected with, and he felt was just so important to his childhood. And he actually says a lot of her, you know, the great qualities that she has are things that he aspires to.
I love the few shots of the art from Women of Wonder Day, because there are very Zaftig Wonder Women. There are Wonder Women of color. There, Wonder Woman is not. It's a reminder too that in the eyes of a lot of people who really connected with this character, she wasn't just a statuesque, beautiful white brunette.
No, yeah, it's and you see that in a lot of the fan drawings of her. I mean, she's been drawn, you know, very traditional as in comic version, you know, the Linda Carter version, but also just, you know, maybe, you know, Wonder Woman of a different size, shape, of a different, you know, even the clothing has been, you know, modified, with some, you know, artists wanting to kind of just change up the costume in ways they like. Of course, there was a very big debate, I think, a couple years ago about her wearing pants, which was real interesting. But, you know, it's great that so many people, you know, have that connection with her and want to and kind of celebrate her with their interpretations of what she kind of represents.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. You can also email think@kera.org. Let's go next to David in Dallas. Hey, David.
Hi there.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Well, I'm really loving this show, particularly because I've, like one of the callers earlier, I've also been a long-term comic book reader, and Wonder Woman has always been one of what I consider to be one of the most fascinating characters, which of course has made her one of my favorites, along with Batman. And I was listening to what you were saying earlier, and I've always wondered if one of the reasons why Hollywood has had problems with being able to write her is because they've never really understood her. One of the things I've always been frustrated with, at least within recent years, is the 70s TV show, as great as it was at the time, it was a little campy in the way that it portrayed her, which it was the same way with a lot of shows. And at that time, like I said, it was pretty much the norm. But the character had been revamped in the late 80s by comic writers and artists George Perez and Marv Wolfman, and she became what I consider to be a much stronger, more, I guess, sophisticated type of character, not only because she was powerful and still was the same character we knew of, but they decided to use much more of the Greek mythos that we knew to be there but didn't quite have a full grasp of it. And they really thrust her, the entire character and the dynamic of the character, with that, and merged them very well together.
Yeah, well, Aaron, I see you nodding your head.
Yeah, you know, I think, again, I laugh at some of the frustration I've heard, you know, in talking with people about this, is it's sometimes a little bit like there's so much great material to pull from to make the Wonder Woman film, or to do even reboot a series. It's almost like there's you know, strong storylines and writers who really have done a great job, and, you know, you could tell by fans' adoration of those, you know, periods, it's like it's there, so why can't they just pull the best aspects from that and do something with it?
One of the things you do make time for in the film is showing, I guess, a series of classes for teenage girls that teach them how to make their own content, not necessarily about superheroes or Wonder Woman, but to sort of empower them to take charge in the media.
Yeah, it's a wonderful program in Seattle, Washington, called Real Girls, and it basically is empowering girls to learn how to create short films and to understand that they can make their own media. They don't just have to consume it. And that's really the most powerful take-home message that we want from the people to get from this film and to think about it, is to have girls be inspired to be the creators of the media that they want to see. If they want to see, you know, if a girl is inspired to write that Wonder Woman script from this, then that, I feel that we have done our job. It's, you know, I want to see these things. I want to see women portrayed this way. I want to see people like me, people like my friends, people, you know, these are the stories I want told. And we want them to feel empowered to go find the resources to do that and to know that they can do that. You know, and that's really the core of the whole film, is that that's kind of our hope, is to inspire.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Next on the line, we have Brant in Frisco. Hi, Brant.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome.
I just wanted to steer the discussion a little bit towards the origin of the Wonder Woman comics, what's referred to as the Golden Age of comics. A lot of the overtones and the imageries within the real original, or at least the original published comics, was very misogynistic and at points very fetishistic. And I just wanted to kind of discuss what has brought such what could have been a very pulled back portion of feminism, at least in the comic book industry, and has really become almost a sort of triumph towards that feministic goal. I'll fight specifically one of Wonder Woman's original or older weaknesses. If her hands were ever bound, she was forced to do whatever she was commanded. And so there were just lots of little things like that in the original version that were very, very almost oppressive to what would be considered now her very feminist drive as a character.
Yeah, Brent, I'm so glad you brought that up. And in fact, the issue of the early sort of use of bondage in those comics is an element in the film.
It is. We do touch on that because it's a very key component of her history. And, you know, as the film, it's kind of what we try to show is just kind of it's fascinating because, yes, on the one hand, she is this, you know, character of power and women, you know, pro and women and power, all that. And then there's the side of, yes, when she gets binded by her magic lasso, she becomes powerless. And there is a lot of women tied up and bondage imagery. You know, I think that goes back to her creator and his own interests. Again, he's pretty fascinating, so I would encourage anyone to they want to delve further in. He deserves his own movie, is my opinion, like an HBO something. I don't know. But, you know, I think, again, as you just kind of saw from that was kind of that was in the 40s. It's an interesting complex and opposing in a sense, but then it just kind of disappears, I think. And that happened also in the 50s where those criticisms came, and maybe that was, you know, they kind of looked at those and kind of pulled that out, but they were totally failed to recognize the strong aspects of the character.
Well, I wonder, you know, early on, were comic book audiences like largely male? I guess are they largely male today, or has that evened up?
You know, I think actually when she came on, it was both. I would say it was probably obviously quite a large males. But I mean, my mother is, she's almost 70, but she's, you know, said she would go read comic book. That's what you did. You went to the store, the corner store, and got mm-hmm. the comic book off the rack. Gloria Steinem says the same thing.
Yeah.
I think at one point it was probably pretty, it was all children read those. And I don't know, you know, as that changed, as the comics, you know, morphed over the years, you know, then it did become more dominantly male readers, and still is. But I think that's starting to change again, because there's been a lot of chatter and uptick, especially online, and you see a lot of women now going to comic cons and comic events, and they are very well read and know their characters and love to cosplay. And
is wearing a costume,
yes, of your characters,
out, right.
They're embracing it. They're embracing that culture. So I think more, you know, women and girls are actually getting interested in the genre.
I wonder if William Moulton Marston would be surprised to see that adults, people who are sort of well beyond their adolescence, are still engaging with comic book culture in the 21st century.
You know, I enjoy it. I think, you know, we all gravitate towards those stories that, you know, we like. Why is Game of Thrones one of the top, you know, TV series right now? I mean, you know, if you have cable, well, it's because it's very well written, has all these wonderful stories and all these really great interactions between characters, and it just kind of brings you in. And you have heroes and you have villains, and people like those types of stories. You know, whether it's a comic book, comics, or whether it's an action genre film, or even a war story, but you kind of have those elements that we. I think our culture really does gravitate towards.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak with Laura in Fort Worth. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I just had a comment, not any questions. I'm in my mid-40s, and so growing up with four brothers, what I loved about Wonder Woman was that she was smart. Even when she was dying, she was smart, and she never pretended that she wasn't, and she wasn't blonde.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of the beauties back then, right, when we were growing up, they had to have blonde hair.
All of them had to have blonde hair. Mm-hmm. And I'm dark hair and brown eyes, so no blue eyes, no blonde hair. And I was really quiet in school, really smart, and back, at least going to small school I did, girls really pretended that they weren't as smart as the boys around them.
Hmm.
Yeah, you know, because you couldn't be smarter than a guy that you liked.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and it does seem to be something, Erin, that has changed in today's culture.
Yes, I think, you know, what's interesting, though, is there's been some criticism of some of the more recent adaptions of Wonder Woman, because some people have complained that they feel that she's almost been dumbed down a little bit in her recent comic version. And I think that's because, though, they expect her to be smart. She's been, you know, it's just she's one of those characters. You're like, Wonder Woman's smart. She doesn't need, she can't be fooled. She can't be just... she recognizes ploys, she recognizes traps, you know, and it's kind of like a higher standard. So when that doesn't get held, you know, when people feel that's not being held up, it's almost they get kind of grumpy about it.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I was thinking about this, you know, we still in 2013 talk about, you know, having it all and can you have a family and a career and be engaged in other things. It would be interesting someday down the line to see Wonder Woman sort of juggling, you know, two kids and a minivan and her invisible airplane at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, it's interesting. The recent development in not her current comic, but in the Justice League comic, I think it is. She actually, there was a big to-do about it that she was going to start dating Superman officially. And there was like a big cover and she was kissing Superman. It was just like, you know, and it was interesting to see the discussion about it, because there were some people who thought it was great because they love both characters. But there were other people who said if they make her his sidekick or anything less than him, we are going to be very, very upset. They are of equal to these, but they're like, they're equal. She has the strength and she is his equal, and there should not be, she is not underneath him in any way.
Superman will vacuum, Wonder Woman will do yeah. something else. I just wonder about the pressure on their kids.
Yeah, I mean, save the world. Go save, 500 universes while you're at it.
Impossible to live up to that. Okay, so it debuts tonight at 10 o'clock on Channel 13 in North Texas. And the film it's age appropriate if somebody wanted to tape it for younger people as well.
Yes, we do touch on that bondage stuff. So if you kind of think that if you're, little ones, I would say more of a junior high school, definitely. But, you know, junior high is good.
My guest is Erin Prather Stafford. We invited her to speak to us today as part of KERA's Women and Girls Lead Initiative. She's executive producer of Wonder Women, the untold story of American superheroines. Watch it tonight on KERA Channel 13 at 10 o'clock. Erin, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is now our executive producer. Go, Jeff. You can learn more about the show, find out about upcoming programs, and download the podcast free at kera.org/think. And, of course, we always welcome comments, questions, and suggestions emailed to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.